Welcome back to HealthLink On Air. Linda Cohen along with you. This morning we are exploring natural disasters and the toll they take. And before the break, we heard from Amber Smith, the senior editor in the Marketing and University Communications Department at Upstate Medical University, who shared with us her own personal account of her parents' recent disaster experience with the tornado in Joplin, Missouri, and also read us an account of a physician in that environment, which was gripping. But joining us right now, we have two disaster medicine specialists. We have disaster medicine expert, local specialist, Dr. Jeremy Jocelyn, an emergency physician and an EMS and disaster medicine fellow at Upstate Medical University. And he's also the director of the Wilderness and Expedition Medicine Fellowship Program. And another disaster expert is Susan Pope. She's the Chapter Services Associate for Oswego County for the American Red Cross. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Let's begin by explaining a little bit about what you do in your respective roles. Dr. Jocelyn, what do you do in as far as disaster medicine? What's the kind of thing that you would be doing in a given situation?
Well, I kind of ask myself the same question when a disaster happens. And I think that really is, the answer is probably variable depending on what I can do. I think that one thing about disasters is that no matter how much we try to plan for them and try to stake out what our roles and what we're going to do before they happen, they always seem to change things around and happen at an inopportune time. I mean,
every when time is it ever opportune?
Right. But they never happen as planned.
Yeah.
And the circumstances are always different. And so I think that the role that I play really is, as I ask myself, what can I do to help?
And you're from a medical standpoint,
correct,
though, largely. So right, you're there to deal with people's physical and probably in some way emotional needs.
Yeah.
Second, following a disaster.
Right. And there's a hierarchy of response that happens with disasters, and as well as helping people who are affected, trying to help the recovery effort or the relief effort, and trying to help with the bigger picture and understanding what can we do for everybody and ways that we can help and try to be a liaison between people's needs and the people who are trying to structure the response as well.
Mm-hmm. So that's a very important role, I would think. You're almost like an advocate for the patient.
Correct.
Yeah, with the agencies that interact. Well, you're a representative of an agency, Susan. So what do you do? I mean, what's your role in a given disaster, just like in a generic way, and then we'll get specific.
Mm-hmm. On a very general level, the Red Cross is responsible for sheltering and food in a major disaster. And on a local level, we have a few additional responsibilities, making sure that the clients have their medical needs met so we can make referrals, that they have clothing. Most of the local disasters that we'll deal with will be single family fires. 95% of what we do is dealing with single family fires. So those immediate needs are somewhere to stay, food to eat, the clothes they've lost, medical needs, possibly they lost eyeglasses, dentures, things like that. So we can help with that. On a larger scale, the Red Cross is primarily responsible for the sheltering and the feeding, and that's what you see on TV. You see the pictures of the shelters, you see the emergency response vehicles driving around, handing out food, cleanup kits, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a new responsibility this time, which is looking at more longer-term recovery, and that was particularly interesting when I went down to Alabama. It's a new thing that we're doing, and it really is increasing what we can do for people.
So generally, what are the most immediate needs that you address in each of your roles? So give me an example. You've just been called been deployed to a disaster. What are the kinds of things you see generally?
I think it's probably, again, I'll try to speak generally, but I think in two large general categories, disasters either are something of a local event where you still have some surrounding infrastructure in place where you can mount a response, a relief effort. And then there's other disasters like in Haiti, for example, where you don't have that surrounding infrastructure in place. And so those are two totally different pictures, I think, as far as what my role can be and what I can do to help and what I look for doing. So immediately, if we're talking about a local disaster, I think the immediate need is to assist with emergency response and trying to basically triage and save as many people as possible. That would be the
from
first.
Injury from it's basically health. You're basically doing like emergency room medicine.
Yeah, in a way, more of a pre-hospital variant of emergency medicine, mm-hmm. where you're actually just going to the people, and trying to determine how far along people are. There's different categories that you can place onto people that have been injured in a disaster. Mm-hmm. And really the key is to quickly move through as many people as you can and try to categorize the help that they need, and then be able to respond and get the sickest people out first and get the sickest people to help first, and then be able to get the people who can walk and move on their own to be able to point them in the right direction and get them plugged into emergency services as well.
Now, you mentioned Haiti, and I know that you've been to Haiti. Mm-hmm. You were involved in the earthquake.
Correct.
I mean, in the recovery from the earthquake.
Right.
And you've also been down in Mississippi.
Mississippi, yeah, after Hurricane Katrina struck the coast there.
So what are the kinds of things that you saw there? Tell us about that, your recent experience.
Yeah, I was actually very surprised to see how much just damage, destruction, and really a breakdown of the local infrastructure that could happen with a natural disaster on U.S. soil. That was, for me, it blew my mind. I had no way of comprehending it until I had been there, until I had experienced it, until I really drove the streets sitting on the back of a pickup truck, trying to help people to be able to understand how much disaster can happen and how U.S. soil you could be without resources, without the infrastructure, mm-hmm. and really have to reach out so far, you know, from New York or from different states all over the country that sent resources down because they just didn't have capabilities to respond locally.
I would imagine it would have made you feel very helpless yourself. I mean, offering the help you can, but without the support that you would normally have.
100%. Yeah.
Susan, how about you? I know you were in several disasters, or one particularly in Alabama.
The tornadoes that hit Tuscaloosa was my first national deployment. I've done lots of local stuff, but that was the first time I'd been out on a national disaster. And it's just like Dr. Jocelyn said, you can prepare yourself all you want to, but when you get there is when you really understand the impact that it's having on the local economy there and on people's lives. The tornadoes are very surgical. You can see the path that they've taken. The tornado that hit Tuscaloosa was a mile wide and in places, and it crossed the entire state of Alabama. It wasn't just Tuscaloosa. It also touched Birmingham and a lot of very rural places. So most of the work that I was doing was out in the very rural areas, small towns that didn't have much infrastructure anyway, and then that was taken away. And in a local disaster, we tell people, well, you can go to this agency, you can drive there, we'll give them some money to go and get food. The people that we were talking to in rural Alabama, their cars had been crushed by trees. They had no transportation. They couldn't get to the nearest store. So somebody had to bring those things to them, and that's where it was different.
So what were the key services that you provided or were involved with providing when you were down there?
In the immediate response for the Red Cross is, as I said, shelter and food. And if people are out in rural areas and cannot get to those big shelters that we have in towns, we have to make sure that they have somewhere safe to stay. Could be with family, with neighbors. FEMA was already very active when we arrived. I got there a week after the tornado hit. So people had already been getting their paperwork done. But sometimes they didn't know who to turn to for something as simple as getting a generator, that kind of thing. The power had gone. And even the people that got their power back right away still had to wait 5 days. So those kind of things really have an impact on any family. Children weren't in school. They couldn't get there. You know, the days were completely disrupted.
And also, I would think the kinds of needs changed over time. Mm-hmm. There were first more immediate kinds of needs.
That's right.
And then, obviously, the needs changed? And what kinds of changes did you see?
We saw changes in that people were going back to work because their place of work was still okay. It was that the house was gone. But they could go back to work, and then their lives took on more of a routine, and they settled down a little more. What we were concentrating on, though, was longer-term recovery, those kind of changes that happen in people's lives where we have to help them months and even possibly years down the line.
I would imagine finances and health issues as well. I mean, did you see in your experience, Dr. Joslin, that there were health issues that may have begun at that point but would be chronic problems that would carry on?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I went down just after the search and rescue stage was finishing up in Mississippi after Katrina. And that was really, working in a medical tent there, we really did see mostly people who had chronic problems, who tried to go to their doctor's office as they were scheduled for this chronic problem, but to find out that the doctor's office was not there. Mm. Or they tried to contact their doctor, but their doctor didn't make it through the storm or had left and been evacuated. And so even if they did have a prescription left for a medication that they needed chronically, they found that the pharmacies were gone or that the pharmacies were out of stock. And sometimes it was a 100-mile journey to get to a pharmacy to get chronic medications that they needed. And so that was the job that I played for the most part.
To try to plug those holes.
Right.
I'm going to have you hold that thought because we have to take a short break, but we're going to come right back and continue talking about this incredible challenge. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen, along with my guest, Dr. Jeremy Joslin, and Red Cross Chapter Services Associate Susan Pope. We're talking about natural disasters and both your roles in some national disasters, both out of state and locally, and how folks do survive those. Now, before the break, Dr. Joslin, you were talking about, in some cases, there were people who, this was in Mississippi, mm-hmm. where people who experienced Katrina just had a chronic illness and they couldn't find their doctor. Their doctor was gone. So obviously these were enormous things. They may not have even suffered from the storm itself, you're saying, but all the ramifications from that. Tell me more about that in terms of the infrastructure and what you saw down there.
Well, the infrastructure was just a mess. And the people down there were just they were so thankful for any services that they could get for the relief efforts, for people who traveled down there to help them out, and they were so resilient and even humorous. I have several pictures at home of people who were able to take such a terrible situation, and on their house, a house that's practically demolished, paint on the wall of the house, for sale, a real fixer upper.
And oh my God.
But they found
black
a way.
Humor, yeah. Dark humor.
They found a way. They were always just looking at the other side of how things were gonna be okay, and they were glad that they made it, and they were thankful that we could come down and help. And to me, that with seeing all the devastation, the one thing that really made it worth it for me was interacting with the people and just seeing the spirit of those people down in Mississippi after that.
So what would you say, and I'm going to get to you in a second, Susan, what would you say for you was the most gratifying? Was it that?
It is.
In terms of this kind of work?
It's being able to find somebody who has a need and help them. For me, that's why I do emergency medicine. When people have their greatest need, I want to be able to be there for them and to make a difference in somebody's life when they need it the most. And part of responding to a disaster is somebody who has had the worst day of their life, be able to offer something that I can do to help them and to make a difference. And in medicine, you know, there's a lot of things that are wrong with our system of medicine today that aren't very gratifying. You know, the system's not very gratifying for many doctors, but being able to hone in on an experience where I could be there for somebody and be able to really make a difference and help them out is why I do it.
It's amazing. It also sounds to me like not only did you help, are you prepared to help them at that moment of devastation, but it sounds like it has to have a ramification from then on in terms of helping them beyond. I mean, the fact that somebody was there to help, for one thing, but also in terms of actually intervening in their medical care, obviously would carry them beyond the moment. So I think that's incredibly honorable and noble work that you're doing.
I could only hope that it would help them going forward.
Yeah. And how about you, Susan? I mean, it must be very, very difficult. You were in Alabama. What was it like helping people or trying to help people?
A lot of what Dr. Jocelyn said just resonated with me, because the Red Cross sends out disaster assessment teams right after the disaster to see where are the most severely affected areas, who's going to need our help, and basically how much money is it going to cost us to provide that help. And then we went out there a week after that, and we could see that the main thoroughfares were cleared of the debris. But in the residential areas, the trees were still down. Power lines had been cut, but they were still down and blocking the area. So we were on foot a lot of the time in Tuscaloosa itself, which was the city that had just a line drawn right through it by the tornado. But I had to smile as well when Dr. Jocelyn talked about that one house. I saw a house that had completely gone, was flattened, and the sign was up saying, got a little drafty, so we moved. And yeah, the humor is still there. What else can they, if they don't have that humor, they're going to just crumble. But they don't, because they're very resilient and they will help each other. We saw people who said, I don't have anything left to save, so I'm going to put my effort into helping somebody who does still have half a house, or where the things are scattered everywhere. The tornado will pick things up and carry them tens and hundreds of miles. People were finding things in their pile of rubble that used to be their house that didn't belong to them, because they'd come from 60 miles further along the tornado path. And things that they expected to find weren't there, because even the heaviest things will get picked up by the tornado. I mean, if you can pick up houses, it can pick up couches and things like that. So they're gone. And vehicles were stuck in the side of buildings. And the brick buildings, like the churches and the schools, fared a little better. They were still intact for the most part, but they had stuff stuck in them. Light poles were stuck in the facade, or vehicles were stuck there. And
talk about being turned completely, your world being turned completely upside down.
Yeah, sometimes literally. The house is turned up on its roof. Yeah, literally upside down.
So would you say that in the same way, that was the most gratifying thing, to be able to be there to help?
The most gratifying thing was being the person that people could say, where people could say, what do I do next? And we had an answer for that question. We met families who had called FEMA and requested the paperwork but didn't know how to fill it out. And we could tell them where to go for that help. It wasn't our role to fill it out from one nonprofit to a government agency, but we could tell them where the FEMA office was or who could help them complete that form. And without it, they wouldn't get any help at all. They have to request the help. So that was part of it. Or just being able to take a bag of apples to a family with four children who hadn't even had, you know, a juice box or anything like that, just to hand that over, it was like Christmas for them. And that really is very gratifying, to do those little tiny things.
It's amazing work, and you both should feel very proud of your efforts. What was most frustrating about it, though?
I think the most frustrating was probably how slowly things have to happen. You want to be able to help more quickly, but it has to run its course and paperwork has to get filed and those kind of things. So that was probably part of it. And also, Dr. Jocelyn mentioned, you have to find the people who have the needs. And sometimes, I don't know if it's typical for Alabama, but people will get themselves a mobile home, put it somewhere, and put a house number on it. It's not registered with 911. They don't even know about it. So disaster assessment can't necessarily find it at the end of a dirt road. We met one family that, if we hadn't stopped at a roadside barbecue just to ask, how did your business fare, we never would have found out that this family was living in a mobile home that had been cut in half by a tree falling down in the tornado, because nobody would have found them out in the middle of the woods. So that is really a challenge, finding the people that have needs. And then once you've found them and you can address the needs, it's a whole lot easier.
I think you must have, Dr. Jocelyn, found in Haiti in an earthquake situation where, as you mentioned earlier, the entire infrastructure was devastated. It must have been extraordinarily frustrating and difficult. Tell us about that.
One of the most frustrating experiences in all of medicine that I've had was in Haiti. Because the resources are so limited. It's part of an island.
It's one of the poorest places on Earth.
It is. And being at the tent hospital that I became involved with, down there really was sort of at the top of a pyramid of care that could be delivered. And we really did pride ourselves in having some of the resources to be able to do some surgeries, some orthopedic care. And we did act as a point that where we evacuated people out to the hospital ship or to Miami. But one of the most frustrating things was being able to be at this place where it was supposed to be the best place for people to go in the whole country after this disaster, and have to turn people away. People who I knew were going to go home and probably were not going to make it. But we had nothing that we could do for them. We had no alternatives that we could offer them. There was nowhere for them to go. Things that are technical, like doing pelvic surgery for somebody who has a badly broken pelvis, and especially in an elderly person, you need blood, you need monitors, you need special anesthesia. We might have had some of the physician resources, but we just didn't have the operating plant or some of the other resources like blood to be able to do these surgeries. And so we had to turn people away with life-threatening injuries, or injuries that we knew were not compatible with life over the long term.
We would never
have to do something like that. But down there, it was something that we learned. We just had no recourse whatsoever.
You know, speaking about how it might change one's perspective, it sounds like here in Central New York, we have been extremely fortunate for the most part in terms of not experiencing things like earthquakes. I mean, I think there may have been a tremor once in the 30 years I've lived here. And tornadoes are very rare, if at all, occurring here. We do have our Labor Day storms, and we do have our ice storms, that kind of thing. And as you mentioned, those kinds of fires, the family fires, are devastating for that individual family. But I think there can be sometimes a certain kind of complacency that sets in an area such as we live in. And yet, I think we need to be apprised of the fact that a natural disaster could happen here. Do you think we're ready?
It's almost up to every individual to be ready themselves. That's the message that we try to get out there together with FEMA, is be prepared. You just don't know when it's going to hit. And it's interesting that in the last 50 years, New York State ranks fifth in the 50 states for the number of presidentially declared disasters. It's amazing. People think, how can that be true? It's not just the natural disasters, though. It's the man-made ones, too. It's things like the megabus incident. It's things like terrorist activity. It's things like a plane crash just outside Buffalo. All of those things happened in New York State, and they count among the big disasters that we've had to deal with. So while we may think that, oh, there's another winter coming, and we can deal with that. We know how to get the fuel we need. We have a generator. But what if something happened that we didn't expect, that is more unusual for us, like a plane crashing or in some other transportation accident? And the tornadoes that have been through this area, there was a tornado in Rome. There's been tornadoes in Massachusetts. It's not that far away.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I guess getting back to it, Dr. Joslin, are we ready? And is upstate ready?
I hope so. As somebody who's academically involved in disaster medicine, this is something that we address, the Department of Emergency Medicine here, something that my colleagues and I think about, we talk about, we try to plan for, we try to be prepared for. We want to be there when our community needs us and be able to provide services after a disaster.
And you had a recent experience locally, the megabus.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so part of our preparedness plan for the department is that when something like that happens, we are able to respond. And so within our department, we have something called EMS Physician Response Team that can be activated by fire control through the 911 system. If a local agency needs the help of a physician on the scene, they can activate us. We're on call 24/7. And a physician who's trained in EMS and emergency medicine will be able to go to the scene and help. So on that night, the system was activated. There were EMS physicians who went to the scene of the crash, who helped there on the scene. But then, even just a step larger than that, our department ramped up. We have a system where we call in extra physician help to the emergency department to be able to prepare for any surge of patients that might come in, so that we can be prepared and be able to respond and be there for the community. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm. And did you have a recent experience that you wanted to tell us about, Susan, a local experience?
I Not really. It was a story I wanted to tell you from Alabama, where a gentleman, it's about going deeper into what the person is telling you. We had a gentleman who ran a group home for men with dementia, and that home had been destroyed. So he had all these people in his own home, and we were talking about that, and he said, we're fine. And we said, what about your family? And his face crumpled, and he told me that his nephew had his two toddler-age children in his arms, and the tornado took the children. And that, it's okay to cry with the client. I had to. There was nothing I could do. He was breaking down, I was breaking down, and it's just a moment, a very human moment, where we can just share that little moment with them.
How fortunate, though, that they had someone like you, or that we do have organizations like the Red Cross, and that Upstate is there for people, especially locally, should a disaster strike. Well, Dr. Jeremy Jocelyn, an emergency physician and EMS and disaster medicine fellow at Upstate Medical University, and my other disaster expert, Susan Pope, the Chapter Services Associate for Oswego County for the American Red Cross. Thanks, both of you, so much for sharing your perspectives, the wonderful work you do, and let's hope we are ready here in Central New York. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back, so please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.